is dyslexic design thinking. For the past 25 years, Gil Gershoni has been the head of his own branding agency, Gershoni Creative. And one of the things he's passionate about rebranding is his dyslexia. In this series, Gil sits down with members of the dyslexic community for eye-opening conversations about the intersection of dyslexia and creativity, and what dyslexia can teach us about ourselves and the world around us. Today, Gil talks to Chris Arnold, an innovator, strategist, writer, and entrepreneur whose work builds connections between brands, communities, and diverse minds. Enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to Dyslexic Design Thinking, a series in which we explore the way dyslexia influences the way we think and create. I'm your host, Gil Gershoni, founder and creative director of Gershoni Creative. Today's episode is a part one of a two-part series featuring Chris Arnold, an innovator, creative thinker, writer, and entrepreneur. Chris is the founder of Connect2 and a co-founder of Diversity Lab. He's also dyslexic. Welcome, Chris.
Hi there. Thanks for inviting me on the show, Ashley.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So Chris, let's jump right in. So 6 years ago, you ran a posting for your marketing firm, The Garage, that says only dyslexics should apply. The post went viral. Why did you choose to single out dyslexics?
Well, when we started our other agency, Creative Orchestra, some 14 years ago, what I noticed, it was a very diverse group of people came in. So we started as an agency with a new model, which incorporated people from all kinds of different disciplines, you know, filmmaking, design of every kind, not just the usual ad students and people. And it kind of made us really rethink about the whole way people think. And what I noticed over that period is we had quite a lot of people come to us who were neurodiverse. We had a few people autistic. We had quite a few people who were dyslexic. And what I did notice was that the problem-solving ability of dyslexics was far superior to anybody else. They were very creative, yes, but it's the problem-solving, the strategic. And what grew out of Creative Orchestra was The Garage, was when we had clients coming to us saying, look, can you solve this problem with advertising or marketing? We'd say, well, that's not really a marketing problem that's going to solve your real problem. You need to find a different kind of solution. In fact, you need to look at a business solution. So we'd send them off to go and find some business consultant, and they'd come back and go, well, could you do this for us? We'd go, well, okay, we'll have a look at it. And what we found out, when we put it to the whole team, we had about 28 people at the time, what would happen is it's almost always the dyslexic people that solve the problem. And that kind of, I mean, I've always knew the dyslexics were good because when I was at Saatchi's, we had a sort of unit of dyslexics problem solving. And so we were looking for more people to get involved with the Garage Innovation Lab, which has kind of transitioned into Diversity Lab. And so I ran this ad with the picture of Steve Jobs, basically saying only dyslexics should apply. I never expected to get the kind of publicity we were expecting. It just went kind of wild and viral. And we had lots of people contacting us. We had over 1,000 people contacting us, which is absolutely amazing. And we did meet some very fascinating people. But we had a couple of people complaining that we were being prejudiced against non-dyslexic people. But there's no law against that.
Well, 6 years, the world was a little different as far as acceptance of our different neurodiversity mindsets. So I can definitely see that being quite a conversation. What was the general reaction to the post?
Very, very positive. I think what was very good, actually, was the first time anybody had ever actually put an ad just hiring dyslexics. So it actually became a bit of a sort of thing. I mean, a lot of people have used it in presentations and stuff to talk about the positive change. And somebody actually said, well, it was a kind of milestone because it was the first time anybody actually went out there and said, look, these guys have got talent. These guys are being recruited by business and in business. And now, of course, you see people like EY going out and hiring neurodiverse people for their center of excellence, which is a brilliant thing they do. And other people are looking to hire them, but nobody had ever really gone public about it. It was kind of, we don't talk about it. And we were like, you know, very public about it. I mean, I came out as a dyslexic. I don't know what the term is. very early in my career in advertising, people said, you don't want to talk about it. I said, why? And they said, well, stigma. And I said, screw it. You know, I'm proud of being dyslexic. And then I later found I was ADHD. I knew I was hyperactive. And I just said, no, we got to be honest about these things.
Well, I commend you guys for doing that. I think that's wonderful. I'm, as you, just extremely proud of being dyslexic. So, you know, it's the confidence, it's the attitude that sort of makes the rest of the people sort of need to catch up to that. Did you guys end up finding the dyslexic that you were looking for?
We did find some very interesting people that came to us. We did discover that, you know, there's a bit of a myth about dyslexia as a superpower, and this has been a term that's going around a lot. And if you look at a lot of the data, there is definitely that group of people at the top end of the curve, you could say. So you've got the Richard Bransons we talk about, you know, the Steve Jobs, the Einstein, the Picasso, all these people are highly creative, innovative, imaginative. But then you have got a group of people at the very opposite end of the scale. You find a very high incidence of dyslexia in prisons, for example.
Right.
So it kind of depends slightly, what is your personality type? What is the context that you've grown up in? Have you had the right support or not? And really, what has life dished out to you? So if you've kind of in a very disadvantaged background, economically very poor, you've got scores that are very bad, not supporting you, there's a more chance you'll end up as, you know, thrown down in the rubbish, you know, because you can't read and write and all the rest. But if you're at a good school, you've got good parents, chances are you go to the top. And so it is something that can divide. And what is certainly apparent is that a personality has a key play in that. You know, it's all about self-esteem. And if you've got self-esteem, then you plow through. And I, when I was at school, didn't know dyslexia even existed. You know, certainly wouldn't have been able to spell it. And it wasn't really talked about much. And it was a bit of a mystery in those days. And I just knew I was different. I knew I thought differently. I knew I was good at some things and bad at others. But I knew that although I was bad at certain things, like reading and writing, and I got kept down a whole year at school, I knew what I was good at was thinking. I knew that I was problem solving, imaginative, innovation. So I knew, well, I can do that and you kids can't. If I can't do it. So I didn't care. I kind of had a different balance for me. So the self-confidence kept me going. And I think the other thing that's very interesting is a lot of successful dyslexic people are also ADHD.
Well, I can see the correlation between, you know, I usually describe my dyslexia as leaping, now walking, or even flying, right? We make these very extreme connections. And then you look at it through all the sort of facilities of the mind and the body. Of course, you would have the same sort of jumping around mind energy that flows in the same sort of cognitive framework. What are some of the biggest things you've noticed working with your dyslexic colleagues?
Well, I think you have to be honest, there's a challenge. I mean, and I would say also most of them are ADHD, is firstly, there's a big thing I think about focus, because all of us know we're very easily distracted. We've got our heads spinning all the time, lots of ideas, it's just constantly going. So sometimes focus is the biggest challenge, and I've learned to hyper-focus. Mm. And that ability to hyper-focus is the challenge. And I found that one of the problems with a lot of dyslexics is firstly making sure they understand what the brief is. So we changed the brief from the traditional brief you get in a lot of agencies, which is here's the proposition, to here is the outcome. And I found that focusing on the outcome was far better than focusing on a proposition, because a proposition you push forward. And also what we found is because we had quite a diverse range of people, not just dyslexics, we had people come from film, photography, fashion, architecture, initially when we studied creative orchestra, because it was an orchestra of creatives. What we saw was that they were often trained in different ways. So, for example, the Bauhaus methodology that product designers have, which is see problem, think solution. You had the advertising, which tended to be the, here's a proposition, now dramatize and push it forward. We found that illustrators tended to be more wildly imaginative. They just sort of went into storytelling a lot. So we found about four or five different methodologies we started working with, and we started seeing which worked best. And the one that worked best was the one which kind of links to NLP, which is focus on the outcome. I noticed that with a lot of creators, for example, the reason they were very successful award-winning creators because their first outcome was, can I win an award? So they focus on award-winning. So I worked with Dave Droger of Droger 5. You know, the focus when we were at Saatchi's there was that it was very much about win awards, win awards. Most of the briefs really started with go win an award. And that kind of seemed to work very well for not just dyslexics, but others. If you knew what the outcome was, you focused on it. And therefore, you did everything you had to get there. So we were able to say, look, here's a brief that we want to do some great work on, but here's a brief we have to sell this product or change people's minds. And we did a lot of stuff that isn't just about flogging products. It's about, you know, charity work, changing public policy ideas. And so that worked really well. But there were times when you had to admit that this mindset wasn't going to crack a problem that was probably needed a more linear mindset.
Well, I very much resonate with what you're saying. You know, as someone with dyslexia, have you learned managing people? You know, it's really what you're going to, because not everybody on your team is dyslexic and all your clients are dyslexic. So how do you find a balance and how do you bring them along and how do you work with your colleagues?
I think they use the term now, psychologically safe environment. I mean, we didn't use that word when we were building agencies. We just knew that we had to make places that people felt confident, that they felt uncriticized and unjudged. And I think when you bring people in, for example, when we had this thing about having five or six different disciplines of creativity, so designers, you know, product designers, architects, filmmakers, and all that working together, there was that fear of judgment of each other saying, well, you know, I do this, but what's that person over there going to think about? He's not a filmmaker, so is he going to judge me badly? And we managed to create this very flat environment. And first it started by the senior level, by not having a kind of hierarchical senior level. You know, yes, we own the agency. Yes, we had some very heavyweight senior people, and you do need those. And yes, we had some support staff. But basically, it was a very flat family structure. And I always base it on the family that you should feel that you can, and especially ideas, you should feel that you're capable of saying what you want and exploring. And we had this idea that there's never a mistake. There's never a bad idea. You know, it's just an idea that may be not of its time or not right at the moment. And I think we encourage people to think very well without criticism. And that was a very important part of building a team of people feeling positive. We also gave people permission. We had this thing called the yellow card. And the yellow card was you can make one massive failure and play the card. It's like a get out of jail card. And what that does, it says, if you had the right intentions, I mean, obviously, if you come in drunk or something, that doesn't count. But if you had the right intentions and you took a risk and you try to do something, and we had this idea is that I don't expect you to come to me and ask me, can I have permission? Just do it. We gave people permission from day one. Just do it and see what happens. And if it goes wrong, so it goes wrong. You play the yellow card. And giving people permission to fail and take risks and not feel that it's going to affect them, it's so liberating. That is absolutely amazing. And I advise that to all companies now. You just got to give people permission to fail. Otherwise, you live in a critical society and then people don't take risks.
Yeah. Well, as dyslexic, you know, we had to learn very quickly that we are not as skilled with the linear thinking. So failure was either something we embraced or we ran away from. So, yeah. But if you embrace the failure, that's really where evolution, you know, crosses the line. And then you become addicted to the fact that where else can we jump? You know, how big is the problem? You know, like, give me something serious that we really can get our head around so we can apply our dyslexia mindset and dance with the problem. You know, I understand that you made connections to results from the ad, actually, that you made your friend, colleague, Nigel Lockett. Tell me all about that relationship.
Yeah, Nigel, I can't remember if I contacted him or he contacted me. Either way, I think it was a link through a comment from Dr. Hallam Taylor. We had a chat and he was saying it was during the pandemic, really, post-pandemic. I mean, everything changed during that pandemic period. It really had a big impact on the ad industry. We had a creative orchestra, which went a lot quieter because it's traditional advertising, although a creative agency. We had Connect2, which we'd started, which is very much for connecting with communities. I'm a great believer now that, you know, community is more important than an individual. And then we had the garage, and it really had gone down to being very quiet. And of course, not a lot of people working because there wasn't that much work. And I met Nigel, and Nigel was a professor of entrepreneurism. And he said, well, how's the garage going? Because he loved the idea. And I said, well, this got a bit quiet, really. We're not focusing on it too much at the moment. And he said, well, have you thought of scaling it up to something different and bringing bigger, heavyweight people in? So instead of selling as a pure, smaller consultancy, creating more of a kind of group of mindsets. And we said, so we chatted about it, and we were ready, you know, quite closely in with people like Jim Rokers and Helen Taylor and a good few others that we all knew, because it's kind of, we got a hangout group in London. Mm-hmm. And we discussed it and thought, well, what a good idea if we had this kind of global group with the idea that because we all think differently, we could use that ability to make a difference in the world. You know, that's a very big thing to go for, but, you know, there's nothing wrong with thinking big, is there? You know, so, and, like, you know, like all dyslexics, we've been so used to making mistakes, we stop worrying about it. You know, you just go, let's jump. So we launched this thing and pulled in, we've got about 40 odd people involved in it. And it is a little bit chaotic at the moment, I admit, and it needs a little bit of sorting out, because we also brought in not just dyslexic people, but autistic people and other people. So that's created a kind of dynamic I wasn't expecting that kind of makes it more complicated. And in fact, the only thing was that Nigel chaired it at the beginning, then he retired. Sort of said over to you. And I was rather hoping for once that somebody else would take on the responsibility. So we have done some great stuff. We found ourselves talking a lot of conferences. We've found ourselves being part of the debate at the moment about education, about talent spotting in work, about supporting people in work. And we do have our own agenda now. And I think I always use this thing called the DICE methodology, which is, if you look at a dice, you can see, you know, there's six faces, but you can only ever see three at once. And we so often see the first three ideas and stop there. And if you say to people, yeah, but life is about looking for the three you can't obviously see, search for them. And I've always used that with my creatives. And it is always pushing to the next three that you haven't seen yet, which I think is what we've done always with our creatives, always with our thinkers and strategists. And I think that was quite interesting, because for them, it was like, oh, you're right. We do see the kind of three obvious ideas. We haven't really looked for the less obvious, but we know they must be there now. And I find that it works really well. So we've been looking at that kind of find the three ideas that nobody's thought of yet, and, you know, change the way you look at things. And I think what I like about dyslexics, and I see it also with autistic people, we do see things in a different way. We see things in a more dimensional way because we're dimensional thinkers. And therefore, we solve things in different ways. And it brings me on to a lovely bit of data I found. I think it was from Bain's and Company, the management consultants, that 85% of problems in a company are never solved. Right. Of the 15%, only half are solved. The other half are badly solved. So that means we live in a world of a lot more problems. So we need to be more problem solvers. And that's where we come into our element, really.
So true. I love the DIE methodology. I can totally relate to it, you know, and, you know, because as dyslexic, we tend to sort of naturally, quickly, in a blink of an eye, look around the corner. And that's exactly what you're talking about. You know, it's if I can see it, then it's the obvious. And obviously, it's not the right problem. And obviously, if it's not the right problem, then it's definitely not the right solution. So you have to look around the corner in a different way to find solution for the problem.
We often see the solution that others search for. I got told off at a meeting once. We'd had a big energy company come in and they were having a meeting. And the meeting was about how they could sell green energy to the customers who weren't buying it, basically. And I sat in the meeting and I basically came up with a solution in a blink of an eye because it seemed obvious to me. And I think sometimes we undervalue our ability to solve a problem. And I said to them, you know, well, have you tried this? And they went, no. Why has nobody thought of that? That's brilliant. That's exactly what we should be doing. Great. Thanks, guys. That was the end of the meeting. My managing director went at the time I was working for another agency before I started my own, went absolutely mad at me. He said, do you know we just lost 50,000 quid on this because, you know, you just gave them the answer. We could have given them and charged him for it. I said, well, it just seemed obvious. I'm sorry. I hadn't put the value on the idea that he would have. I don't know. Maybe I would not have thought of it. It had been written up as a brief, but it just seemed bleeding obvious what the solution was. And they did it and they were very happy. And we didn't get paid.
Well, sometimes, I mean, there is always, you know, I'm sure you're the same, that I have endless ideas, you know, to me, it's, I never understand the creative block, you know, because it's like, it's not the dyslexic mind, right? But, you know, sometimes give me a few for free, it's not a bad thing. Tell me a little bit about how did you come about to the Diversity Lab and how you got started?
So having sort of put this concept together, we contact a lot of people and everyone said, yeah, this sounds really, really great. Now, what is interesting in the marketplace at the moment is that most of us are aware that there's a growing consciousness of the positivity of dyslexia. And it's certainly been people like EY have been championing it. I mean, Heron, who started the first Center of Excellence group down, I think it was in Texas. And they tried that about 7 years ago, and it's been hugely successful for EY. I mean, it's become a sort of a golden asset. They now sell it as a high-end thinking problem-solving unit. And they've now expanded that to, I think, at least 7 countries. So that was coming along. And then Deloitte sort of backed up. It's hard to say whether they actually launched it themselves or they backed it. But one of the directors launched this thing called Neurodiversity in Business to gain, to create more of awareness, but more at the kind of bottom end to look at, you know, bringing neurodiverse people into the mix. Now, we're seeing a lot of mixture between a path of dyslexia and a path of neurodiversity. So you've got organizations like Made by Dyslexia, Kate Griggs, which is backed by Richard Branson, pushing dyslexia. We've now seen the term dyslexic thinking registered and recorded as a term you can use on LinkedIn. At the same time, you've got broader neurodiversity groups like ION and Diversity in Business trying to push the general issue of it. So what is very interesting in the marketplace, where I fully answer the question, is that there's a bit of confusion. We have at one end the HR people looking at it through the lens of diversity and inclusion, which are called D&I. And so they've been going through the idea of, you know, are we employing enough disabled people? Have we got ethnically mixed people? Are we making sure we've got disadvantaged people? So their job is to really make sure companies have a more balanced employment. The problem that they are seeing is they are still seeing neurodiversity and the different areas of that, you know, dyslexia, dyspraxia, autism, ADHD, et cetera, as disabilities, right? Mm-hmm. When you get to management level, be it group departmental heads to the CEO, they don't see it that way. They see this as people have a skill that can be adapted and used to make them more innovative, like EY. So they're seeing the talent within. Those are completely opposing viewpoints. So they see the differability, HR sees the disability, and there's a big clash going on at the moment in companies. The way we're solving this is quite unique, as you would expect. So we came in from another angle. We said, let's stop talking about dyslexia being an advantage. Let's first of all look at the skill set and look at psychometric profiling. Now, I don't know how many of the audience are familiar with psychometric profiling. If you're visually, you'll be able to see a little chart here. Now, psychometric profile is basically how you look at people around a sort of 360-degree circle. And it looks at people from, if we want to put it one way, you know, creative, big vision thinkers, you know, conceptualization, imaginative, radical, you know, people who are the, you would say, as the, you know, the real innovators and creatives. At the opposite end, you'll have people who are more cautious, evidence-based, practical, more rational. So you have the very neurolinear at one end, and you'll have the neurodiverse at the other. On the opposite side to that, you'll have people who are very, I call them neuroemotive. They're very highly emotionally driven. For example, you'll see people who get very, obviously everyone knows the Queen's recently died, and there's some people got super emotional about it, and other people at the other end are going, oh, okay, she's dead, so what? Life carries on. And so you've got those different dimensions, and the circle goes around. So what we've done is working with this company called Luminar, looking at this whole aspect of where, if you look at the skill sets you need within a company, you very quickly look at it and you look at something psychometric and say, well, this team needs, person does this, the person does this, so it needs these different mindsets. Oh, and coincidentally, that big picture conceptual imaginative thinking coincidentally happens to be largely dyslexic people. You know, you can also plot autism on there. And then you could also plot how ADHD. So what you're doing is you're coming from something that businesses understand. They understand the need to identify talent and skills, how to balance the teams and how to make that produce more productive, effective teams within their businesses to make their businesses. So it's a very business case. When you then say, well, that group of people over there that you're dying to get your hands on happen to be largely dyslexic, it looks at it from a different way around. Right. It's much better than just saying, oh, by the way, dyslexic people are very creative. You should hire them to be in your innovation department. It works the other way around. So actually, it's better that when you look at it that way. So I did a psychometric profiling, and guess what? I came out big picture thinking, imaginative, conceptual, creative, strategic, you know, and pretty rubbish at all the evidence-based, practical, cautious, neurolinear stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a different way of thinking of how we look at it. But what we've also said is that psychometric profiling is largely seen in a 2D way. What we're trying to do is dimensionalize it now to give it a more dimensional aspect to it. Because I'm a great believer in this idea that we need to look at things in more 3D, conceptual, holistic, rather than looking at things in 2D, which is actually how neurolinear people like to look at things.
So what has the Diversity Lab been able to deliver for clients with your methodology?
Well, I have to say, we're still quite early days yet. So we've been working, say, with a charity that we've really been helping them see things and think differently. We've been talking to other companies and groups to say, look, you know, we can come in and look at things differently. We can help you innovate in a way. Now, one thing that's very interesting we picked up talking to some of the companies is they say their internal divisions, be it MPD to innovation, are often very slow. They're often not as good as they think. They often underdeliver. And a lot of that is not to do with the people. It's to do with the environment they create. They don't create the right environments, or they hire too many of the wrong kind of people. And so we've had some very interesting conversations recently where people may say, well, look, maybe we can give you a project and see if you can do something better or different. But I think there's a coming together now with these different organizations to try and work together in a positive way. We've been asked to go and do lots of talks. I mean, we do masses of talks at the moment. Yeah, we've been in schools. We're going to a lot of schools, which is great. We have been talking on this big public policy committee, a think tank yesterday. We've been doing the creative festivals. You know, so we're out there at the moment doing a lot of word spreading, which has been very successful for us. And I think the difference between us and some of the other groups is that we are seen as a real deal.
Yeah.
You know, we're not talking about dyslexics. We are the dyslexics. You know, that's right. We're on stage, mate. And hopefully we do find our way to the right venue at the right time.
If you enjoyed our conversation today, be sure to subscribe to this series wherever you get your podcasts. And follow along on Instagram at Dyslexic Design Thinking. You can also drop us a line at dyslexia@gershoni.com. to receive our monthly newsletter and learn about our upcoming programming. Dyslexic Design Thinking is produced by Gershoni Creative. Until next time, be well.